say the game is getting old. Monday morning and your coffee's cold. Life is not what you want it to be.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to A New Direction. My name is Jay Izzo, and oh, man, great show again. So easy. Great guest, great book. The book is called Human Hacking: Win Friends, Influence People, and Leave Them Better Off for Having Met You. Folks, let me just say something to you about this whole book that we're about to talk to with Chris Hadnagy. Did I pronounce it right? Hadnagy?
You did. That was wonderful. Okay,
perfect. When we talk about human hacking, I mean, I know there's things that's conjured up in your mind, you know, hacking into a computer, you know, can I hack into this? Can I hack into that? And you have this idea, you mean we can hack humans? Well, yes. Yes, we can. In fact, you probably do it on some level every single day. You are actually hacking humans because let's be all honest with each other. We are trying to get what we want from somebody else, whether that's in the sales business type of thing. And people are trying to get something from us. If you're married, your wife or husband wants something from you and is trying to work you to get that. And there's a negotiation thing and things happen. And we're hacking each other in a sense of the word. Now, let's also understand there is a dark side to this, okay? And we're not talking about the dark side because the dark side is called manipulation, which my guest is going to talk about. At some length for sure, at manipulation. We're not talking about manipulating people here. We're talking about leaving people better off because they met you. And at the same time, being able to do it in a way that's pleasant and at the same time help us achieve the goals that we want to achieve without doing it in a dastardly way. I don't know if there's a better way I can say that, but that's about the way I pulled it through. And so Christopher Hadnagy has written this unbelievable book. I told him it's probably the top 10 books I have read in doing the show in 10 years. And it is outstanding. I highly suggest. Chris, is this on audio too, by the way?
It is, yes.
Okay. For some of you who are not readers, I am a reader. I do listen to audiobooks too, but I am a reader. Get it then. Listen to it because, and take notes from it because it is powerful. It is unbelievable. And I believe it is fundamentally life-changing if we do things in the right way. And empathy rocks, by the way. I just want to throw that out there. Empathy rocks. So let me, without further ado, let me do this. Let me introduce to you Christopher Hadnagy. Do you prefer Chris or Christopher?
Well, Chris is better unless I'm in trouble.
Okay, all right, great. So Chris Hadnagy is a global security expert, master hacker, and the founder and CEO of Social Engineering LLC. He specializes in understanding how malicious attackers exploit human communication and trust to obtain access to information and resources through manipulation and deceit. His goal is to secure companies by educating them on the methods used by attackers, identifying vulnerabilities, and mitigating issues through appropriate levels of awareness and security. During the course of his 19 years in the information security industry, Chris has created the world's first social engineering framework and newsletter, as well as hosting the first social engineering-based podcast. He's a well-known author on the subject. He has written 4 books for security professionals, including this one, Human Hacking: Win Friends, Influence People, and Leave Them Better Off for Having Met You. He also lectures and teaches about social engineering around the globe and has been invited to speak at the Pentagon, as well as other high security facilities. I know a lot of you here in the Triangle have a lot of high securities where I live, but places that people I know listen to the show, he would be a good person to really be in contact. And that'll be in the show notes, by the way. Additionally, he is the founder and executive director and a board member of the Innocent Lives Foundation, a nonprofit organization that identifies anonymous child predators and helps bring them to justice. And so if you want to get involved with that, it's called Innocent Lives Foundation. I highly encourage that you do. So ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show. Welcome to the first time, and I hope not the last time, Chris Hadnagy. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for that introduction. I think we should just end it there.
don't do that, man. You're starting to get some oxytocin flowing in my brain. I've got some dopamine hits going on now. You can't be doing that to me, brother. You can't start that way with me, man. That's just not the way to get this going. In the introduction, by the way, that's a little inside stuff we'll probably get to a little bit later. In the introduction of the book, Chris, you say that this book, I reveal our secrets to you to use at home and work, learn how to read people effectively from their body language, how to get people instantly on your side by uttering exactly the right words, how to make requests in ways that dramatically increase your chance of positive response, how to spot and thwart people who are trying to manipulate you, how to plot out an important conversation from beginning to end to increase your odds of success, and much more. And you move on to talk about Kevin Minnick's definition of social engineering, and you've altered the definition of social engineering, or what we call human hacking. Explain what people typically think when it comes to human hacking and social engineering, even though I alluded to it earlier, and the difference between how you see it.
So when people talk about social engineering, they always use a definition. It's the manipulating of someone to do something that you want them to do. And the reason I don't like that is because that's only the malicious definition of like what the bad guys do. So I kind of redefined it as any act that influences a person to take an action that may or may not be in their best interest. And I think that definition broadens it to the point where whether you're using it for influence or manipulation for good or bad, it fits the definition. It just depends on what your intent is. So like you said before, everyone's trying to hack everybody. And it doesn't mean that you're trying to make them do something that is bad for them. It just means that we're trying to get what we want out of life and doing it in a way that uses these principles in a better way.
So let's start, dig right into it. And I love chapter one because there's research done by Dr. Tasha Urich, who's an organizational psychologist, and she does this research on awareness, self-awareness in particular. And she does interview and people, 95% of the people think they're very self-aware. But she, in her research, found out that on a good day, on your best day, maybe 15% are aware of themselves. And you start off the chapter entitled, Know Yourself So You Can Know Others. I think this is, to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's a fundamental principle. If you want to be able to do this right, human hacking correctly, you got to hack yourself. Am I wrong? Did I got that wrong? Or is that really where we should start?
You have to start that. I'll use myself as an example. I'm so sorry for that. I'm a very direct communicator. And sometimes being a very direct communicator could mean you come off like a jerk. Like you could say to somebody, hey, you're really not doing that well. Or, wow, you gained a lot of weight. Or, man, why'd you cut your hair that way? That's a really direct type of communicator. And if you don't know that, you sometimes, and I found myself, younger self, saying things like, well, I'm just being honest. I mean, if they can't handle it, maybe they shouldn't talk to me. And I found myself saying things like that. And that is a complete lack of self-awareness. When I know that I could be that way and I understand that, then if I start a conversation with someone and I say, I need to get this point across. Now, let's say I got a really good friend who's really unhealthy, gained a lot of weight, and I really worried about him and I want him to be healthy. I can walk up and say, hey, Steve, you know what? You really got heavy, man. Like, you're going to be dead before you're 60. Like, what's going on? Or I could say, hey, Steve, you know, during lunch, I was thinking of taking a walk because I'm feeling like a little lethargic. As one of my friends, I'd love if you can walk with me and we can just chat. I'm getting the same results, which is getting him moving, getting him to do some exercise without having to say, hey, man, you got fat, right? So it's learning when you know yourself, you say, what is my goal in this conversation and how can I achieve it without making my flaws show up, right? So my direct communicator is a strength, but it's also a flaw. You have to know yourself if you're going to be able to influence other people.
Here's something that you point out in this chapter that I thought was interesting. You know, I don't think people realize what they say and they do on social media platforms.
Yes. And
you made a point of saying that terrorist networks, and this is because people don't even recognize, have enough self-awareness to know what they're saying on social networks. Terrorist networks are known to scrape social media platforms like Twitter or Facebook, throw in Instagram, searching for people who are expressing hostility toward Western governments. We don't know ourselves well enough to know that all of a sudden we've made ourselves vulnerable.
100%. And not just terrorist networks. Think about the hacker groups. I think it was last year the FBI issued a report that said over 82% of the spear phishing and spear vishing, that's phone calls, attacks that they've discovered, are using implements from the target social media. So you go out there and you're like, I love Trump. I hate Trump. I hate this government. I hate that government. You know, taxes suck. This country is awful. And now people are watching that, right? Right. And the bad guys could use that. And one of the things I learned in helping the government, it was as many years ago, we were doing terrorist hunting on Twitter, because Twitter was a big network where they were recruiting.
Yeah.
And they would look for people who were disenfranchised against the American government. And they would start these conversations like, what would you do if you could make a change? If you can change the government, how would you feel? Oh, I want that. Oh, I want that so much. Well, what, you know, and it starts off with these kind of conversations to the point where they're like, something radical has to happen if you want change. You can't keep doing the same thing and expect change. And they would take it as far as when you take the word ISIS and you use the Arabic symbols, it could be translated into the name Jesus.
Right.
So now they would say, we're fighting the cause for the Messiah. And this is a Muslim group that would then use Jesus
right.
To radicalize somebody and get them to come over to their side. And by the time it was done, and we saw it on the news, folks, Western men and women flying over to Afghanistan or Syria. I mean, when I say women, it blows my mind, because you know what's going to happen to them the second they step foot in.
Right.
And they willingly went and joined these groups because they were so radicalized. That is a amazing example of the malicious side of social engineering and how effective it is.
Well, I think the other thing that happens is we think we're impervious to that. And that's overconfidence and arrogance.
Yeah.
And so then what happens is we get so arrogant to think, well, I could say what I want. Nobody's going to be able to influence me in a direction I don't really want to go. You're actually the person that is probably the most influenceable.
So listen, I've sent, I'm going to guesstimate probably around 19 million phishing emails in my career. 19 million. My third book was about the psychology of phishing and how it works. I fell for an actual phishing email. I mean, I'm an Amazon junkie, so I'll admit it, right? I live on Amazon. And I ordered all this stuff for a conference that I was going to, and I had it going directly to the hotel, and I'm running late for the airport, and I'm packing things up, and I get this email. It says, hey, your Amazon order's not getting shipped due to a declined credit card. I tell every person I have ever trained, you don't click those links. You just open your browser, you go to Amazon.com, you log in, you check your account. But I was stressed. I was running late. I had all the negative emotions. I clicked that link. It opens up to a page that looks just like an Amazon login page. And the only thing that saved me is before I put my password in, I looked up at the URL bar. And instead of seeing Amazon.com, I saw like something, something.ru, a Russian site. I was like, I fell for a fish. I mean, I'm the guy who literally wrote the book on how to do phishing. And I fell for a fish. So when I'm sitting in front of a CEO and they say, I would never fall for this, I tell them that story and I'm like, I'm sorry. The right pretext with the right piece of influence at the right emotional time, and anyone can fall for it. Anybody on earth can fall for it.
We're all susceptible.
Yeah.
I've gone down that road.
Everybody.
Accidentally. I didn't see it. They caught me. Some of them are more obvious than others.
Yes, yeah.
But some of them are very, very good, very, very clever. They caught me at a perfect emotional time.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm sure it wasn't. I mean, there's no way they can know my emotional state at the time. But that's what phishing. It's called phishing, not catching.
Mm-hmm.
And right, what do? We keep throwing the lure out, And then, you know, you change the lures every now and then as you're throwing it out in the water. And, you know, eventually one of them at the right moment, you know, I'm swimming by and you got me.
Mm-hmm.
You got me.
Well, you think about this. They can know your emotional state by looking at your social media. Let's look at one of the most popular attacks right now, which is horrific. The romance scams. Mm-hmm. They go on Facebook and they look for women who have just lost their husband. And she's posting pictures, you know, oh, my husband of 45 years, 50 years, and here was our anniversary last year. Here's the car that we bought. Here's the boat that we have. They know her emotional state. She's lonely. She's sad. She wants companionship. So they reach out and they say, you know, I know you don't know me, but I just want to tell you, I lost my wife to cancer 7 years ago. It does get easier. God bless you. So now she feels this unbelievable dip of oxytocin because a stranger understands her emotional state. That starts a once a week chat to a once every couple days to once a day to all day, every day. I want to visit you, but I live in Croatia, Poland, whatever, and I can't afford the visa. And the visas are $5,000 and the tickets are expensive. So I'm going to save my money and I'm going to come visit you. She's like, no, I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to pay for your trip. She wires the money. Of course, he's got a problem at the airport. His visa was filled out wrong. So they took the visa away. He needs to apply for a new one and a new ticket. He lost all that money. I'm going to do it. I knew a woman, sadly, $125,000 she lost. She thought she was in love with this guy. They know the emotional state. They look at the social media. Are you happy because of a new job or some kind of award you won? Are you sad because of a loss? Are you stressed because of a financial struggle? We're putting that thing on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. We're posting our lives everywhere. The attackers know. And they're very good at reading between the lines and saying, hey, here's what Jay's thinking today. Let me use that to attack him.
We're more easily hacked than we believe we are.
Yes. Yeah.
And I want to encourage the listener to understand, friends out there who are watching and listening. And by the way, thanks everybody, Jerry Gunn and the number of people who are chiming in. Thank you for tuning in live. We're all more susceptible than we want to believe.
Yeah.
And so it's important that you listen to the show and tell your friends, tell your family members, because it's going to be a podcast, because we are really going to try to help you, but at the same time, help you do it in the right way too, as well. Chapter two, become the person you need to be. Richard Jenny, funny guy, comedian, said, honesty is the key to a relationship. If you can fake that, you're in good. And this is where we start talking about pretexting in the criminal mind. And let's talk about pretexting, because I don't think we think of it in this term, but I don't think we take pretexting to the extent that you're going to talk about it, because it's a far more detailed idea than what we typically set up. So let's talk about pretexting.
So let me give you two examples. Okay, I'll give you one from my work life that could be the bad and the good, right? So this week, the reason I'm in a hotel is I'm breaking into a big gas and oil place, right? That's my job. So I get hired to go break into these places and steal a bunch of stuff and tell them how I did it so the bad guys can't do it, right? And if I just walked in and said, hey, I'm here to break in and steal some stuff, security guard's going to stop me, right? So I need a story. I need a story. And my story for this one is I'm a fellow employee and I came from another division. And I'm here to just check on some technical issues that I got reported and we're here to fix them. And so when I walk around, I got to look the same as they do. I got to understand the lingo and the jargon, and I have to basically know where I'm going. So for all that to work, I got to download floor plans. I kind of have to look into the industry. I have to find pictures of employees. How do they dress at work? I have to know the names of people, finding who's the boss, who's this and that. That way, when I walk in, I'm not like, oh yeah, I'm here for the, that thing about the person who needs me. You know, you have to be like, no, I'm here because Jay called and said that he had some problem with the server and I'm here to go check it. So I'm going to go head to the server room and I have to know right where that is. Because if I'm like, I said, which way is it? I don't match the part. A good pretext will make sure that the person you're speaking to doesn't question what you're saying. Now let's talk about a good side. Use an example. My daughter breaks the house rules, right, when she was a teenager. She didn't come home at a specific time and her location was shut off and she wasn't answering phone calls. So I'm angry. Now it is 2 hours past curfew and she finally comes home. I'm angry, but I'm also concerned. So I have two pretexts I can be. I can be the ticked off dad that wants answers and you're going to give them to me now because you broke the house rules, or I can be the concerned dad. I was really worried that you were hurt. So I have a choice. Now, both of them are real, but I have to choose which one I'm going to let her see. And I could think, okay, I really want to know if everything was okay. Like, what happened? And if I'm angry, Dad, she's not going to talk to me. So when she comes home, hey, honey, I was really worried about you. That means everything has to match. My facial expressions, my body language, my tone of voice, all of it has to match my pretest. Because if I'm sitting here like this, I was really concerned about you. Uh-uh. That does not match. My face is not matching. My tone of voice is not matching. So I have to know that about myself. Again, going back to chapter one, and then say, I know you're angry, Chris, but man, when she comes home, if you don't show concern, this conversation's not going to go anywhere. So you got to say that to yourself, and you got to match it all. And again, it's not manipulation, and I'm not trying to do something that she doesn't want to do. I'm trying to find out, are you okay? Did something bad happen? Mm-hmm. Did you take something that you shouldn't have taken, and you think I'm going to be mad? You know, and we can get to the bottom of the conversation by saying, hey, listen, all I want, I don't care if you drank underage, or you took, call me. I'd rather be know you're home safe than to have you in danger. And that's the art of pretexting.
And we're going to talk more about that. You're listening to Chris Hadnagy, the book, Human Hacking, When Friends Influence People, Leave Them Better Off for Having Met You. Available bookstores everywhere. Amazon, also Audible as well. I think there's a Kindle version too. Am I correct on that?
There is.
Yeah.
And by the way, I read the Audible. I did the reading myself.
Oh, you did it yourself. Okay.
Yeah, I did.
That, which is awesome. I'm glad that you did that. Yeah, available in all sorts of formats. Check it out. Human Hacking, Christopher Hadnagy, Hadnagy. You're listening to him here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, sponsors here, Zoundy. I was speaking in Salt Lake City a couple weeks ago to a group of people, and I have my books, an Audible book, and I wanted to get a copy of my Audible book out to everybody for free before I spoke and while I was speaking. And so Zoundy allows me to give away my audiobook for free. And you go, well, Jay, what's the point of that? You're not making any money. Here's the deal. People downloaded my book because they gave me their email address. When I got their email address, I can now interact with my listeners or readers, if you will. And that way I can ask them questions. What did you like about the book? What didn't you like about the book? How can I, and what would you like me to see me write next? What are some topics that you think would be in my wheelhouse that I might want to do? And it's such a great conversation because normally I don't know who's listening to my books or reading my books, but now I've got a way that I can actually be in contact with my reader. That's what Zoundy does. So listen, if you're in the audiobook space, you're publisher, author, whatever it is, check out Zoundy.com/J. Zoundy, Zoundy.com/J. That's my little code. And then use my code JAY25 and they'll unlock the savings right there at Zoundy. Check them out. Great stuff. Great books. I'm just telling you, it's just the route to go. I love it. And I think you will too. Linda Kraft Team Realtors, 40 years helping people transition in life. And you go, oh, Jay, it's a real estate company. Mm-hmm. We need to transition in life. Listen, every place you've ever lived has been a life transition. I don't care if you've rented someplace or you've moved another house, somewhere you could point to, yeah, I remember when I lived here, this was a life transition. Well, they've been doing that successfully 40 years, helping thousands of people all over the world. Even though they're locally owned and operated, non-affiliated with a national brand, they'd love to help you too. So check them out, lindacraft.com, LindaCraft.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with Chris Hadnagy and his book, Human Hacking, absolutely outstanding, great book. As I said, top 10 in 10 years of books I've read, absolutely outstanding. We're talking about pretexting and setting up that pretext. And I think, you know, as we left, you talked about your daughter's situation and, you know, she was late and, you know, you create the pretext of going, okay, I've got choices here. I could be the angry, you know, upset parent, how dare you, and you violated the rules and you're upset, or I can be the concerned parent. I think the thing, though, that you do probably naturally that we don't do is we don't think through the pretext. Because Malcolm Gladwell talks about truth default theory here in your book, the idea that we operate with the assumption that people are that we're dealing with are generally honest. And then he also notes, and I think you note this too, a bad pretext triggers our unwillingness to trust others. So if we're not genuine about it, I mean, you can act like a concerned parent. But if you're not convincing in that pretext that you're really concerned because you're still angry, the pretext is going to fall apart. And so let's talk about really setting up the pretext mentally, because we really have to think through this before we could just walk in there and go, okay, I'm the concerned parent. Okay, here I go. I'm now the concerned parent. I don't think we could just walk in with that.
Yeah. So, okay, I'll give you two examples again, one from the work and one from, we'll go back to my daughter. So from the work, I tell my new people when I hire them, hey, we're going to go, and I know you're going to be nervous. You're going to be scared. I'm not going to say control your emotions because that's a silly statement, because we can't. We're human, right? So what I'm going to say is know your emotions, know yourself, and work it into the pretext. So you're nervous. So what can nervousness come off as? As tense, as a little bit of fear. So maybe when we're saying something and you say to me, you look at when an earshot of the person that's listening, hey man, I didn't get to eat breakfast this morning. I am starving. When can we take a break? Now, if the person sees a little bit of jitteriness on you, their brain's going to go, she's hungry, right? Instead of, why is she so jittery? You answered the question that the mind is going to ask before the mind asks it. So work your emotion in. Back to my daughter. I knew I was too angry to have that conversation at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I said to her, hey, honey, listen, I am very concerned, but right now I'm feeling a little bit upset. So tomorrow morning, we're going to talk about this, but let's not do it tonight because I can see you're upset, I'm upset, and we're just going to argue, right? Acknowledging that. So now she doesn't think I'm faking, and allowing her to know, but we're still going to talk about it. And then moving that conversation to a time when the emotion can be controlled. Sometimes the reason that you said we don't do that is we want to get our point across, right? Mm-hmm. And we're not thinking about the results. All we're thinking about is I need to get my point across. But if we're saying I want results, then let's do this in the best time and atmosphere that will get me the results, right? And just because I want answers now, maybe now is not the time. I mean, if you're married, anyone who's married or has a partner, you've had this. You've had a long day and you did something stupid. You left your clothes on the floor or didn't wash a dish or whatever. And you come home and your wife wants to talk to you about it. And if you've had I've been married 31 years. So God bless my wife. She's amazing. She can see on my face, wow, he is dead tired. This is not the time to chew into him. So she'll wait. You know, now we're sitting down the couch watching TV, having a drink. And she's like, hey, is it okay? Are you okay if I talk to you about something? She asked me first, right? Yeah, sure. What happened? What's going on? Now I already said it. She set it up. But the minute I walk in the door and man, this was a long week. That is not the time to tell me the 15 things I've done to fail, right? So it's when you thinking through, when you know your emotional state and you know what kind of pretext you're looking for, you can set it up so you can succeed and not fail.
I read in this chapter something, you didn't necessarily phrase it this way, you phrased part of it this way, but I saw it in a different way, is that we don't know ourselves well enough to know that we have a baseline, you didn't say this, but a baseline pretext. I think you call it habitual pretext, where we kind of default to it. And again, yeah. I don't know if you actually said it that way. I'm kind of, this is a Jay Izzo paraphrase, but that oftentimes we don't set the pretext up enough. And so then we aren't prepared enough for it. And so then we default to what our natural habit is. And it never works if we really aren't convinced of our pretext. Is that a right way to say convinced of our pretext?
Well, I wouldn't say convinced. Here's the way I would word it, because you got it right. We all have a default baseline, right? And I said it before, mine is direct. So I'm also very task focused. So let's say I'm in the job, or I'm in that, let's use the family. I'm in the conversation with my daughter and it's not going the way I want. So I'm being nice. I'm being the concerned dad, but she's rolling her eyes. She's not opening up. If I revert to my baseline, which is task focus, though, you are going to answer these questions, then I've basically blown the whole storyline, right?
Right.
But if I'm self-aware and I see that it's not going the way I want, she's not answering, she's not opening up like I expected because I've changed my pretext, then I have only two choices. I can revert to the baseline, or if I feel myself reverting to the baseline, I can be self-aware enough to say, hey, I feel like we're not getting anywhere and I'm getting really upset. And I don't want to continue this conversation while we're both not really communicating well. So let's take 15 minutes and let's talk about this when you're ready.
I want to go back to something that you said in terms of in your job. You gave an example about our emotions. And let's say somebody's a little anxious or nervous. And you were saying to the person, well, okay, well, how can you use that to your advantage? And I was putting myself in that situation. Sorry, I didn't mean to go off on this tangent. It just struck me. And I was thinking to myself, you know, if I was in that situation where I had to go in front of, you know, here I am, there's a security person, right? And I am supposed to go in and I'm doing your job and I'm supposed to, my pretext is I'm supposed to work on the servers. And I'm nervous about doing that. You know, I could probably use that nervousness to say, you know what, my boss just really hammered me. And if I don't get this done, I don't want to go back to him. And right. Yep. And I'm just, I know that's not probably very accurate, but I'm thinking about how can I use that nervous feeling of going, I'm thinking about it, man, if I got to go back to my boss and say, I couldn't get this done. You don't know what this is going to mean. I'm already in hot water.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's kind of how I was thinking about how do I use those emotions in that way that I could take advantage of those emotions in the pretext.
Yeah. You could even start off something because this opens up empathy. You apologize. Hey, I'm so sorry I'm late. You know, I know how late I am because my boss just chewed me a new one for not getting here this morning.
Right.
Now, they'll be like, you're late. I didn't even know you were coming. You didn't know I was coming? The office was supposed to call and let you know I was coming. I got chewed out for not being here at 9 a.m. So I'm really sorry about that. Man, my boss told me if I don't get this done by 5 o'clock today, like there's going to be some problems. So I'm sorry, really sorry. Right now you're apologizing. They didn't even know that supposedly you did, right?
Right.
You're explaining your nervousness by saying your boss just ripped you a new one. That's a great way of using the emotion to explain it before they start thinking. A good pretext should involve the storyline, your clothes, your facial expressions, your tone of voice, everything about you should say what I'm saying is truth. If one thing is off, right? If I came to do work on the servers, but I was in a three-piece suit, like what? Like that doesn't match, right?
Right.
So you have to, everything has to match for it to be believable.
You would be better off with a pocket flashlight in your white shirt.
Right.
Khaki pants.
Yes.
Maybe a little bit of your tail hanging out.
Yeah. Your shirt. And the right tools.
And the right tool. You've got your packet of tools and you've got your Microsoft Surface tablet, you know, that looks like it's been coffee spilled on it at least three times, right? And create that whole context, right, for everybody.
I'll tell you a funny story if you want it.
Let's do it.
We were breaking into a nuclear waste facility. And one of my teammates I had with me, she's a small, tiny woman from the country of Spain. And she is remarkably attractive. But our pretext was that we were coming from a control factory to work on some of the controls they had there. And we almost got caught because the guy, the security guard, was like, there's no way she's a blue collar worker. There's no way she works on machine controls because she came all made up. Her hair's done perfect. And it was something I didn't think about at that moment. And I was like, yeah, that was a part of the pretext that we didn't think of. That you don't normally see people. And I'm not saying you can't, right? But you think about, I always tell people social engineering is not politically correct. It's not, because everybody has a bias.
Right.
We all have biases, right? And we have the halo effect. You see someone that you find attractive, you think that they're trustworthy and they're honest. Well, when you think of blue collar worker, you think of someone that looks like me, not someone that looks like her.
Right.
So bringing her on that job, the guy looked at us and was like, really, really, come on. Like he was like questioning everything I said, to where I kind of turned to her and said, hey, say you got to use the bathroom. And then she left. And once she was out of the room, now I can use influence on him, because when she was standing there, all he can do was look at her and think, absolutely not. So exactly what you said is everything has to match the pretext. So the person you're speaking to doesn't start engaging that beta mindset where they start thinking.
Right. So let's pre-text like a pro. You've got seven steps here. I'm going to walk through them, and I want you just to explain them as we go along. And the acronym here is PREPARE, P-R-E-P-A-R-E. P-R-E-P-A-R-E. I think I said that right. I don't even know. I think I did that. All right. So first step is problem. Identify the issue you're trying to solve. So go.
So let's go like with the job I said I had, right? So our problem is we got to get into the server room. That's my problem. Or my problem is I need to find out why my daughter was so late. That's my problem. That's the first step. You have to identify what the actual deal is. And also in addition to that, you're going to have to start identifying in with the problem, like what kind of challenges might I have along the way.
Okay. R is result. Specify your desired outcome.
Yeah. So that's it. I want to know what my outcome is. So, I mean, that seems obvious, but a lot of times, like let's say in the conversation with my daughter, you might say, well, the result is I want to know why she wasn't home. Well, is that really the result? Maybe the result is I want to know that she was safe, and I want to establish a rule that next time, if you're going to be late and it's because of XYZ, we're going to take different steps. So you need to really understand my goal to get to the server room. Okay, then what? Is that I just get in, walk around in a circle and leave? So I have to have a result. Once I get into the server room, what am I going to do? Once I have that conversation with my daughter, what is the desired result? So you have to really understand it. And it can't be, sometimes people say it's just too simple. You just can't be like, I need to get to the server room. That is not the result. You need to know what it is that you want to accomplish.
All right. Now we start getting into the nitty gritty deeper. Mm-hmm. Emotional, E is emotional state. Identify the emotions you want to see in your subject.
Yeah. So now, like, again, we're going to look at our subject with server room, and I want to see them not looking at me dubious. Like, what is this guy talking about? I don't want to see confusion. I don't want to see them doubting. I don't want to see any kind of anger or stress. What I want to see is compliance. I want to see them nodding with me. I want to see them mirroring my body language and emotions. With my daughter, I don't want to see anger. I don't want to see the arms folded, the eyes rolling. Like, I don't want to see that. I want to see the emotions of, okay, dad is concerned. And I can see that he's telling me the truth about that. We need to have this conversation.
Well, I think it's interesting that it's not only identifying the emotions you want to see, but identifying the emotions you don't want to see.
Yes, yes. The reason for that is because when you're having that conversation, you're going to be reading facial expression and body language. And if you start seeing the emotions that you identified you don't want to see, you're doing it wrong. So you need to pivot, right? So if I'm having this conversation with you, I want a great interview. I want this to be an interview that people are going to want to listen to over and over again. So if I start seeing you doing this, oh man, I better change. I'm not doing a good job, right? But if I see this smiling and laughing and we're leaning in and we're having a good, now I'm okay. I'm seeing the emotions that I want to see. So I know I'm doing the right thing and I can keep on that direction.
So we've got PRE. Let's go to the next P, provocation. Anticipate the emotions you need to project or display.
So now we're talking about ourselves too, right? So I need to understand, like we talked about before, I'm nervous or I'm angry or I want to make sure that I do a good job. I want to make sure that I can exude confidence, that I can exude knowledge in this area. So you need to understand, how is that going to affect your emotional state? Because if I know I'm going to be nervous and I don't want you to feel angry, fear, doubt, then I better be able to explain that away before you start thinking, why does this guy seem so nervous? Right? Because then you're going to come up with your own storyline in your head as to why I am. And that creates doubt, and doubt makes the conversation always go sideways.
A is for activation. Define your pretext. So let's talk about that.
So now we've done all those previous steps, right? So I know I want to get into the server room, and I know I need to stay in there for a bit and take pictures, and I need to not be supervised. I know that I really want my result to be that I want to be able to get in, do that job, get out without getting caught or arrested. Or I want to have that conversation with my daughter and really come up with that end result that we're going to have for the next time this happens, or this interview is going to be phenomenal. You know, those are my results. Once I have all that, what's going to be the pretext that's going to make that work? Mm-hmm. Right. So with my daughter, it was definitely concerned dad, not angry dad, with the goal for that job. I needed to know something about servers. I need to be the IT guy. So like you said, I better look the part of an IT guy and not the CEO. So I start to realize that I need to understand what the pretext looks like from all angles. So not just server guy, it's What's my clothing? What are my tools? What, who do I have with me? What paperwork do I need? What kind of things do I need to have to prove that I am that pretext? Mm.
R in prepare, rendering, determine the specifics of the where, when, and how.
So again, we talked, I love this one because we talked briefly about your good example of saying my boss chewed me out. So I'm going to say, well, I can't go at 9 a.m. Right? What, 9 a.m. is probably the worst time because people are just getting to work and they're focused on their job. I also don't want to go at right at noon because people are leaving for lunch and they may be like, come back later. So I think, okay, what is the right time to do this job? Maybe a little bit after lunch when everyone's in that afternoon lull. And it also gives me the ability to apologize for not being here first thing in the morning. And that's why my boss chewed me out. If I show up at 9:30, they say, so sorry, I'm late. Dude, it's 9:30. We just got here. What are you talking about? Right? So you need to understand the specifics of how you're going to do it. But my daughter, was it really 1:30 in the morning after she came home late and she probably drank underage or whatever that I really want to have that conversation? Is that the right time to do it? Mm. No. So you think about the where, when, why, and all those things, and you say, okay, how am I going to be able to effectively get this pretext done, but in the right timing and the time frame?
And then finally, the E, evaluation, mentally evaluating your pretext, mm-hmm. make sure it's strongly rooted in truth.
This is probably the most important one, is that after, first of all, before you even do it, you want to think through everything we just said. But more importantly, when it's over, sit down and really do a postmortem on yourself, right? How did that go? What areas did I fail in? What could I have done better? What did I do great? How, you know, like self-analyze, like if you could either, you know, if for my job, we film everything, you know, through hidden cameras and stuff. Like you don't really do that with your family, but if you can replay and say, okay, what did I do good and what did I do bad? That can help you to perfect this task next time you have to do it. Because a lot of times what we do is if we get the result we want, we go, well, that was good. I did great. But we don't sit back and think, well, there was a couple flaws in the storyline. There was a couple times that someone asked me a question I didn't know an answer. Or there was that one time the guy kind of tilted his head and was like, what? And why did that happen? What did I say when he did that? Is there something I could do next time that could avoid that? And you think through that, you will become an expert at this type of conversational craft because you're constantly reevaluating yourself.
His name is Chris Hadnagy. His book, Human Hacking, Win Friends and Influence People and Leave Them Better Off Having Met You. Great book, outstanding, available in all formats. He's joining us right here on A New Direction. Hey, folks, I'm going to talk about Zoundy real quick. Listen, I can't just say enough good things about them. I love the fact that I can interact with my readers and my listeners. That is probably that's the biggest benefit. I'm not going to lie to you. That is my biggest benefit, is I get to interact. And if you're somebody who's written books and you're like going, I wish I knew what people were really thinking outside of my Amazon reviews, and maybe you're not getting very many Amazon reviews and you're going, I would just like to talk to people about what they thought about the book. Well, this is what Zoundy does. It gives me an opportunity to interact with those people who download my book, have their email address, and I'm able to interact with them and ask them questions about all sorts of things. And I love it for that. So listen, publisher, author, whatever it may be, you know what? Check out Zoundy.com. Use my little code, Zoundy.com. Then go Zoundy.com/J, J-A-Y. Use my code J25, because we're in the year 2025. So it's easy to remember, right? J-A-Y-2-5. Unlock the special savings. You're going to be so glad you did. And Linda Craft Team Realtors, listen, 40 years, she and her team have been diligently been called the legends of customer service. And even her first customer from 1985 still comes and gets a pie on Thanksgiving Day. She drives herself over. I've met her, sweet lady. And she comes over, she gets her Thanksgiving pie. And I think it's apple every year that she gets. But it just tells you how what they do has impacted people for 40 years. And so, folks, if you're looking at somebody who is considered the legends of customer service, talk to Linda Craft Team Realtors. They can help you no matter where you live. And it's easy to find them. Just go to lindacraft.com. That's L-I-N-D-A-C-R-A-F-T.com. And we're back here on A New Direction with my friend. I think I can call him friend. I'm going to call him friend. Chris Hadnagy. We haven't talked about friendship yet, but we're going to do it anyway. Chris Hadnagy, book Human Hacking, When Friends Influence People. Leave them better off for having met you. We are not very far here in the book, but you know what? We will. It is what it is, and we just keep working through it. So I want to move on here to chapter 3 called Nail the Approach. And this is about build rapport. And you talk about build instant rapport with almost anyone so they'll be more likely to agree with your request. And you have a little subtitle here of skater dudes and oxytocin, and which I found very funny, by the way. It was fun. But the whole book, you had cool stories and fun stories. So let's talk about building rapport, how important it is, how do we get there? And let's talk a little bit about this little thing called oxytocin that drops in our brain and how we get there just by doing rapport, building rapport.
Yeah, my subtitle is because this was a lesson that I didn't learn for many years until I started studying these things. When I was in high school, I moved in 10th grade from up north to Venice, Florida. And the school down there, I mean, my senior class was 1,200 people. So this was not a small school. It was huge. Open campus. And my first day, you walk into the lunch area, and this is like a massive outdoor covered space. You go into the kitchen in line, you get your lunch, and you walk out there, and you got to know where to sit. And anyone who's been in a school, you know what I'm talking about. You can't just walk up to any table. You know, you got the jocks over here. You got the football players over here. You got the surfers over here. You got the ROTCs over here. You got to know, where do you go? And there's always a table of the leftover, the rejects, right? And where do you fit? You got to know where you fit, because if I go and I sit down at the football players table, I was going to end up in a dumpster, because I was not that. I was a skater, right? So I had to make sure. And how do you know? And I always ask people, how do you know where you're allowed to sit? Well, you evaluate, what do you look like? What are you dressed like? And what is your outfit? And that automatically builds rapport. So we talk about this because oxytocin, and really a lot of this research was done by an amazing man named Dr. Paul Zak. I've had him on my podcast a couple of times. He is just a legend when it comes to this stuff. And he studied this chemical in our brain that is linked to trust. And he said something to me that I thought was extremely powerful, that we release more oxytocin when someone trusts us more than when we trust someone else. So if I said to you, and I don't have something, but let's say I said to you, Jay, I got a secret I'm going to tell you on this show that I haven't said anywhere yet. And you find out that's true. Your brain releases oxytocin. I'm your dealer. And it's so strong that even later on, if you're on LinkedIn, looking at my LinkedIn page, your brain's going to release it again because you see my picture, right? And that's how strong oxytocin is. It can bond people. And as long as I never break that trust, as long as I don't do anything to wreck our friendship, then every time you think about me, see me, or someone even mentions my name, your brain releases oxytocin. Mm. So you want to build strong rapport. You do it through building a very trusting relationship with that person.
You know, I know I got a lot of salespeople, business people listen to the show, and there's a lot on, you know, about building rapport. Unfortunately, sadly, the business side of things really doesn't understand the psychology of rapport. At least I feel that they don't. I think they try little tricks and they try little hacks that really are not very good. In fact, it's so obvious you're trying to build rapport with me that actually you shut me down.
Yeah.
Because you're not getting anywhere with me, because I see what you're trying to do here, right? You know, you find out that I'm a Carolina Hurricanes hockey fan, and you can't name a player or the coach. You know, you can't name any of it. All right. You don't know anything about it. You don't know that they even went to the playoffs, but, oh yeah, I love the Hurricanes. Really? Why? Right. And so they look for these little things, but you say here, and I've highlighted this, if you want to build rapport, you must quickly size people up, arrive at a clear but superficial understanding of who they are and what tribe they might belong to, and then find a way to connect personally. So we've got to go deeper than just, okay, you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan. Let's talk about building it the right way.
Yeah, and I agree with what you said about sales. I've done whole trainings, 5-day trainings for sales organizations because they've heard things that we've talked about like on a show like this and went, yeah, we got the wrong training. As soon as you said that, I think about car salesmen. You know, they walk in and they try so hard and then they always follow up with that. Well, let me see what my manager says. You know, we all know that. We all know that trick. So let's say I'm the sales guy and I find out you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan. I'm not a sports guy. I'm really not. So I got to know that about myself. So if I want to build rapport with you, I would say, hey, you're wearing a Carolina Hurricanes jersey. What kind of sport is that? You go, hockey. Man, I don't know anything about hockey. I've never even played it. You know, so why are they the best? Are you from Carolina? You know what? Start asking questions about things that you love. Get you to teach me. Now imagine this. If I say something, if I'm honest, like, I don't know anything about hockey, but my uncle, he's a fanatic. Like, he goes to these games all the time, and all he talks about is the fights. So really, do you go to hockey because of the fights? Right? Like, I don't know anything about it, right? I like golf or whatever. You come up with something that you do know about, right? That tells you, hey, I'm being honest, and I'm also interested in you. Right. I'm interested. I want to know. Right. And I'm going to ask a question. I'm going to shut up, and I'm going to active listen. So now your brain is dripping with oxytocin because I've showed you that I'm actually interested in something you love.
And if I may add here, in its future chapters, and it's something that Cialdini says too, is in your example, you put the other person in a position of authority.
Yes, 100%. Which makes me, I'm okay being lower than you. And there's a great trick for salespeople. I could do it. When you go to shake the hand, you shake the hand with the palm up. Let their hand be on top. Let it be on top and don't twist. Let it be on top. Right away, the brain says, I'm the leader of the person you're talking to. Now I show interest in something you love, right? And now I make you the authority. I make you the head. And now I shut up and listen. And you're the teacher?
Yeah.
That's the great way to – you. A salesperson does that to me, I'm just throwing my checkbook at you. Here, you write the check. Fill it out. I'm done.
We're not even going to build a bracket around it. Yeah,
here's the check. Here's a blank check. Write it.
Yeah, it's really funny that what a great approach, because when we let somebody become the teacher, right? And we all want that feeling that, oh my gosh, you know, I'm just thinking as simply as this Carolina Hurricanes hockey fan, I get to teach you about the team I love.
Yes. So
now I get to exercise my passion towards you, which fires me up. And now I'm almost endeared to you because I'm hoping you're going to ask me more.
Yeah.
And now I'm almost putty.
Right. Exactly. Point,
right.
And when you're talking about something that you love, so think about this. You're talking about something you love. You're smiling. You're happy. You're thinking about the thing you love, which is releasing dopamine, oxytocin. And again, I'm the guy sitting across from you. So you're looking at me and those chemicals are getting released in your brain and I'm the reason. So now, as long as I don't break that, like now I turn to some shoddy used car salesman by saying, let me see what my manager can do. You know, as long as I don't ruin it, you're going to keep that. And we're going to have we buy things from people. Like, think about this. I keep reverting, but let me ask this question instead of tell. We trust our friends more than we trust people we don't know.
Right.
If I'm at my house and my next door neighbor over here, who I love this guy, he's a great neighbor. If he comes over and says, hey, Chris, I hurt my back and I got a couple boxes in my garage I got to move. Can you help me? Sure, Mike. No problem. Right? Got no issue. But this guy over here, I can't stand him. His dog's always crapping in my yard. Noisy at night. 4th of July, they're lighting fireworks to 3 a.m. And he comes over and he says, hey, I just need a little help. I hurt my back. Oh man, I can't, you know, my wife needs me. I got a wisdom tooth problem. You know, I think Jesus is calling, whatever. You come up with an excuse, right? Because you don't want to do it. Well, if you become this person's friend as a salesperson, they're more likely to trust what you say. When you say, this is a great deal, or this is the best offer, they're going to trust you because you became their friend. So building rapport, becoming that person's friend is going to make it easier to accomplish the goal.
It's beautiful. I hate doing this, but we've done an hour.
We have? Really? Wow. You're great at conversation, because that is That flew by, man.
We've done an hour together. You've been outstanding, and I knew you would be. You have sense of humor in your book, and the stories are really engaging. The way you start out the book of breaking into this facility right, is actually great. We're both about the same size, and so I was just imagining myself, you know, being almost 6'4" tall, but looking at myself trying to go, oh yeah, how am I going to crawl over this fence? Got to have them thrown over the barbed wire, and you know, and then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, they have guns. That's kind of changes the whole thing.
A little bit. The
pretext that I developed, we are now very agile, and we're iterating immediately.
Yes, exactly.
So great work. Chris, if people want to hire you or if they want to find out more information, what's the best way they can get a hold of you?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn, or you go to social-engineer.com. That's our corporate site, and you can find out all sorts of ways to contact me there.
Okay, I'm gonna put both in the write-up of the show for people, because this show will be up, folks. The shows go up in about an hour and a half after we're done.
That's amazing.
So I'll put that in the write-up of the show so that you can get a hold of Chris, hire him, sales teams, whatever. Security, he's outstanding. I'm just telling you, the book is, and get the book. It's really, really great. I appreciate you. Chris, just stay with me real quick, please. Folks, it's the show. You know what I say to you every week? You're in control of three things: your attitude, your effort, and your resiliency. I know life isn't going to always give you what you want. In fact, circumstances come at us from out of nowhere and can change things. But here's the thing: you're absolutely in control of your attitude. It's not always easy, but you know what? You can control it. Your attitude starts your day, and your attitude will carry you through it. So take control of your attitude regardless of what happens. You can do it. And then two is your effort. You know what? We don't always have the same amount of energy, but we can always be excellent, and that's your effort. So be excellent as you can today. And finally, resiliency. We all get punched in the gut, punched in the teeth. We get knocked down. It's up to you to get back up, and we need you to get back up. Why? Because we want you on the team, and you're worth it. I'm going to be back next week with another great guest, another great book. It automatically means I get another great show. It's so easy. You had a lot of choices. You chose us. Thanks for listening wherever you're listening or watching us from. I appreciate you so much. If you're, give us a thumbs up on YouTube. If you're on any of the podcast sites, write us a positive 5-star review. We really do appreciate it. It helps us so much. As I say to you all over the world, you know what that is. Ciao, everybody.
To go a different way, yeah. The time has come. Your dreams will take you places you have never been before. Find your passion, find your strength. Don't worry anymore. A new direction. Different way, yeah.